Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, episode 83. It is, Matt, what day is it? It's Wednesday?
It is Wednesday, as far as I know, yes.
Yeah, and if you want to get a little closer to the mic, that's sometimes helpful too. You got to kind of talk up into these guys.
How about that? The better?
That's a little better.
Yeah.
Yeah, you might want to even like move the pop filter closer.
You want me to like scream into this thing?
Wow. Yeah, yeah, you got to go. Bill Halter was over here and he...
he has a loud voice.
He talked really loud, yeah. So it's episode 83. It's Wednesday. It's January 15th today.
You're right. Well, what number was Bill? I want to know. By the way.
What number?
Yeah.
Oh, I think that was before I started numbering them.
Okay.
So, when I was still embarrassed by the low number.
So I beat him then, because he doesn't have a number. Because
he doesn't have a number.
Okay, I'll let him know.
If I had to guess, it would probably be like 25?
Yeah, but you said there was no number.
There's no number, okay. Yeah. So, we didn't really start numbering them until like 30 or 40,
okay,
so.
I got you.
Yeah. I have Matt Santa Maria from KSBY News. He's the sports director at KSBY.
Mm-hmm.
And welcome to the Palatial Garage Studios at Fansmanship.com podcast.
Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah, right.
Beautiful for yep.
Bicycles and
it's cozy though. I'll say that. It's a little hot outside. It's nice and a little
cool.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. You got water for me here. It's a good setup. I love it.
See, yeah, absolutely. We've had Bill Halter on in the past, and are excited to have Matt from KSBY. Matt has been at his job for like 2 months now, 3 months, 4 months,
a little longer than that, five. I think I got here in August
before football season. Now that I think about it,
yep, right before football season,
right. And so you went through Cal Poly football, mm-hmm. and you moved out here in the summertime. You came from Nebraska.
Nebraska, yep.
Were you in Lincoln or Omaha? Or?
I'm from Omaha. I was working at the time in Lincoln for the last couple of years, so okay. I technically came from Lincoln.
All right, and you were covering Nebraska sports.
Nebraska, lots, Husker, anything. Anything Husker, people in Lincoln, Nebraska love it. That's what we were covering.
Yeah, I really have loved the Midwest, and we'll get into that a little bit, too. I just love how into their sports they are and how knowledgeable about their sports are, or they seem anyway.
Uh-huh. No, completely agree. It's like it's a thing that a lot of people say, like, oh, they're the smartest fan base in the country or whatever. And you don't really understand what that means until you go to like a volleyball match and they know like when to cheer and it's great. Like
momentum wise.
Right. It's great. It's great. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. I went up to a game in Wisconsin and mm-hmm. it's, you know, I feel like Big Ten and I guess Nebraska's Big Ten now.
Yeah.
Or Big 12 or, you know, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
The Big Ten that has
the
12 teams.
Does.
Yeah. And the Big 12 that has 8 or something. Yeah. But that whole Midwest kind of band of region is really fun, I think. And,
uh-huh.
and having been to a few games in those places
that
now.
That Pauley, Wisconsin game? Is that the one you're talking about?
No, I wish I was at that
right.
one. Yeah. That day I was hiking Bishop's Peak.
Uh-huh.
And I was looking on my phone. It was right when kind of phones started to be able to tell you scores.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at my phone, like tapping my phone, trying to figure out is this thing right? They're like down by a touchdown. They're ahead for a second or something. And then I remember I went to Quiznos after when there was still a Quiznos over there, and I looked at the phone. Oh man, they lost by one. What a bummer. And then I saw the news and it was on like two missed field goals. And now it's really a bummer.
Yeah. It's weird to me living in the Midwest my whole life, watching events like that. Like I remember watching that game and then now getting a different context. Like I remember watching Cal Poly basketball games last year before knowing that I was going to, you know, live here and, uh-huh. and have a, you know, some sort of relationship with the university and the athletic department. And it's funny. Yeah.
Yeah, because Cal Poly, they've gone back east the last couple of years. They mm-hmm. played, was it DePaul? Last year, I think they played them, and they've played at Wisconsin as well,
right.
at the Kohl Center there,
right.
and some of those larger arenas, and they did it this year too with I think 3 Pac-12 schools and a Big East school,
yeah, Pittsburgh,
and,
yep,
and not to mention a few others. So you grew up in Omaha?
Yes, grew
okay.
up in Omaha.
You're from there originally.
I was born in Pennsylvania, but okay. I moved when I was young. My dad works at the railroad, so then we moved all over the place when I was a kid. But okay. I remember Little Rock, Arkansas, and then we moved to Omaha in second or third grade, and okay. that's where I was until I graduated college.
Okay, and you went to college at Nebraska?
I went to college at a Division II school in Nebraska for a year, played baseball in Nebraska, Kearney.
Okay.
For those of you who
it looks like
don't
Kearney,
understand.
Kearney.
Yes.
Right.
Yes, it's Kearney.
Kearney. It's pronounced
yeah,
Kearney, darn it.
I realized that Division II baseball, you got to really love it if you're going to do it. It's a full-time job. Hurt my arm. Went back to Nebraska, Omaha. Not Nebraska, Lincoln. I went to Nebraska, Omaha.
Right.
Did a lot of radio stuff and you know, rest is history.
Got into it. Okay, okay. And so you were a pitcher. Okay, you said you hurt your arms, I assume.
Yeah.
You're a pitcher. Yep. All right.
A pitcher.
And you played for a year in college. That was going to be a question that I asked you. Did you play any sports? So is baseball your favorite sport then?
It's what I played my whole life. I had convinced myself that I was going to the majors to be a... I played pretty much everything. I was one of those kids that just played everything. I mean, I played football, basketball when I was growing up, track, everything. But when I got to high school, I got to a point where I decided to, you know, commit to something.
Focus on one.
Yeah, I was convinced that I was going to make it, and I didn't make it. But... I love baseball. I love college basketball. I love college basketball, and of course I love football. So I don't know if I could say it's my favorite, but one of them.
Does it give you, having kind of been through it in a difficult way, does it give you a level of, I guess, like respect for some of those 18, 19, 20-year-old kids who can go out and do what they do, whether it's in baseball or basketball or football or whatever?
Sure, no doubt about it. I mean, it's as advertised in terms of the fact that you're dealing with a full-time job on top of school, and it's hard. And football, at times, you're going to get yourself a full scholarship, so you're in a way getting paid for it. But even Division I baseball, they're splitting up like minuscule amount of scholarships between their entire roster. So you're doing it for the love of the game. And
baseball.
Right,
unless you're like a top recruit, right? Basically.
Yeah, and it'll differ from school to school. But I mean, a lot of those schools just don't have a lot of scholarships to give out for some of those other sports. But yeah, definitely have all the respect in the world for them.
Yeah, I was talking to JD before the Santa Barbara game, incidentally, about divvying up scholarships and how that all kind of works. And like you said, minuscule amounts here and there. And there are some sports, he said, that you can't divvy up, that they have to be either you have a scholarship or not.
Really?
Uh-huh. And I think men's basketball was one of those where you can't get like a partial deal in Division I.
Judging by the scholarship that I got to play at Division II Kearney, I can assure you that is not a sport that you can get a full scholarship for. Yeah. Or you have to, because I didn't have a full scholarship.
Sure, absolutely. And I think FCS, you can have partials.
Okay.
But FBS, he was saying that you don't. Here with Matt Santa Maria from KSVY. Sports. And so you went to school in Nebraska, you grew up in Nebraska, you worked in Nebraska for the first, I don't know how many years of your career.
I worked, first job out of college. Yeah. Joplin, Missouri.
Okay.
Yeah. Worked as a news reporter for a couple months, moved over to sports, was there for about a year.
That was before their big hurricane or after?
That was during the big tornado.
The big tornado. So that you were there when that happened?
Sure was. Life-altering in every sense of the word. It was unbelievable.
And you were reporting at the time.
I was in sports at the time, but everyone started. I mean, it gave me a sense of, you know, living. I'm serious. Like, it's crazy. This tornado just blew this town up. 150 people died that had just no chance. And we were so close to the center of the tornado that there was debris plastered to the other side of our apartment complex where my wife was, because it was in the rotation.
Right.
And it just gives you a sense. I was out there being an idiot shooting video of it.
Cause was it during the day? Could you see it?
It was about 5:40. Okay. I saw it. If you're a photographer or videographer, you can sometimes get caught in the, like, looking through the viewfinder as if it's
not thinking you're right there.
If it's a movie, yeah. And I remember looking through it, and this is it's a tornado. It's cut and dry. And I got a buddy next to me, and we're sitting there looking at this, and we're like, whoa. And I swear, in like a minute, it dropped 20 degrees. We felt this undercurrent, like, coming back under, like, the wind underneath us was coming back towards the tornado. And we're like, okay, time to go inside.
Oh my God!
Yeah, it was unreal. It was unbelievable.
Wow. And so you also covered the aftermath of that town.
Right. It was, and that was. I don't want to say renewed my faith in humanity, but it was so cool to see people that came. Like, the way people went down and helped strangers was unbelievable. Matt Cassel will always be my favorite quarterback because he played for the Chiefs.
The Chiefs,
The next day, didn't tell anybody.
right?
Nobody.
He just got in his car.
He just got in his car and went down and helped.
How far away is that from Kansas City?
2-3 hours.
Okay.
But he didn't want...
He didn't want anybody to know, basically.
Exactly.
Right? He just wanted to do it because it was the right thing.
They came down a couple weeks later, like as a team, to do some stuff.
Right.
And he was there, and it was like 110 degrees, and they did this autograph session. And I kid you not, like, this was, he was like an MVP candidate that year. He was a big deal.
That was the year he played really well.
Yeah. And
his first year out of the Patriots.
And this line for his autograph was supposed to be like an hour long signing. This line was like backed up to Toledo. And he sat there for 5 hours and just signed autographs. And he was so nice.
Talked to people.
And he was talking to kids. And I had people calling the station to be like, can I get some raw video of that conversation he had with my kid? Because wow. My kid won't stop talking about it.
Wow.
And it if you have a platform to make a difference, and right. it's so cool to see that how many people did. And wow. just one of that, that's just one of the stories. But
yeah,
that, if you ever see me cheering for the backup quarterback for the Vikings, that's probably why.
That's why. Yeah. I'm sure maybe you and Dave Hovde had some conversations about the Vikings this year.
They're mostly about Christian Ponder and how much Dave doesn't like him.
I've seen that. And Bill Halter too, right?
Yeah.
He's a Minnesota guy.
It's crazy. My old station in Nebraska, we had like a unproportionately high amount of Wisconsin fans.
Okay.
And here, because John Rieger has Minnesota ties,
and Jeanette was in Minneapolis. Yeah.
So we have all these Minneapolis, we have all these Vikings fans and Twins fans. Yeah. We're like, what on earth? Like,
yeah. It's pretty crazy. And the North Dakota connection too, right. with Dave and uh-huh. being from Fargo, I think. Uh-huh. And I think one of the reporters you guys had here went and is in Fargo now too. So
mm-hmm.
yeah, there's all kinds of back right. and forth between it's the
small
Central
world,
Coast.
Man.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of which, you enjoying this weather?
Oh, loving this weather. Yeah. I've been here 5-6 months without time flies. August.
Yeah, August.
6 months.
September, October, November.
So I want to know how long I have to be here until I can complain about things that I shouldn't be complaining about. And what I mean by that is it's 0 degrees where I used to live. But it's a little hot today. It's January and it's like 80 something, and I was sweating a little bit when I came over here. So,
and this is not normal. Just as like a FYI, uh-huh. I mean, I know you probably. I don't know how much you watch the weather forecast, but I'm sure it's part of your job. And so, you know, this is definitely an other than normal kind of situation here.
But let's be real. It's January and it's 80 degrees. Like. No human being should be complaining about this, but right. I kind of just want to be like, it's a little hot outside.
It's a little warm outside.
Yeah, yeah. Then I can officially like say.
Or it gets down in the 50s at night.
Yeah, it's a little chilly. Right now.
I can't walk outside in shorts and flip-flops.
We were on the beach on Christmas, and that's about the best way I can describe how awesome the weather is here.
So how is it to, when you're kind of been in Nebraska and Missouri, what kind of a change is it, and what kind of a decision is it when you decide to up and move to the small part of California that I don't know how much you knew about it, but like what was that process like for you?
It's a process. There's no doubt about it. I remember when I graduated college and I was looking for my first job, I had like a circle. Like I only want mm-hmm. this type of job and this kind of market, this far away from home. It's funny how quickly that circle expands when nobody will return your calls and nobody will give you an interview.
Right.
And not to say I didn't want to move out, because once I moved down to Joplin, my wife and I actually, I mean, Joplin's Joplin. It's a small town.
Sure.
But anywhere you live, you kind of
about the size of San Luis, would you say?
Yes, without the big cities around it. I mean,
SLO doesn't have.
Yeah.
You mean like not even like a Santa Maria close
right.
by? Not even
I don't know the best way to describe
Paso.
It. Yes.
It's kind of more isolated.
Population wise, yes. As far as things to do, there's more things to do here than there
okay.
were there.
Okay. SLO's also got a college that kind of helps that.
Right,
too.
Right. But yeah, we moved down there and it is what it is, but we kind of became part of the community and
sure.
we liked the independence because you
sure.
know we love our families, but you know, you get to a point where you kind of want to.
It's okay to have a little space.
Right, spread your wings a little bit. And when we moved back to Lincoln, we loved having the family there. We had a kid, so it was nice to have babysitters when we wanted babysitters.
Yeah.
But we got to a point where, you know, like we want to spread our wings again. And
uh-huh.
and it just happened that this job came open and right. really, really bizarre. Talk about just the bizarre things. We had gone on a honeymoon
uh-huh.
for our wedding
okay.
like a few months before this all came about. And we were going to go to Mexico. And we're like, no, we have more fun. We just go drive around. And let's just go to California. And my brother lives in L.A. So okay. We flew into San Diego and just drove up the coast.
Yeah.
And it was awesome. And we stayed a couple nights in Hollywood. And the farthest north, I kid you not, that we got was San Luis Obispo.
Okay.
And we walked through downtown one night, and we found Bubblegum Alley, and we...
You did the whole tourist thing?
Yeah. Uh-huh. We went back to the hotel. We were staying at one of the beaches. I think it was Avila uh-huh. or Pismo.
Uh-huh.
And we're like, well, that's nice. That was a cool town. Like, that downtown was really fun. Like, I could see myself living here someday. And I watched the news that night when at the hotel.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, I wonder what market this is. I wonder if it's like part of because I mean, like you gotta understand that I don't know a whole lot about it.
Well, and the market here has changed. I mean,
really? I didn't know that.
Like so, like when I was, well, I mean, it's changed mm-hmm. as far as size. I think, you know, when I was growing up, we got news like there was like parts certain channels that were LA.
Uh-huh.
So which is why like the Lakers were still on KCAL last year right. and like Channel 9. It's right. a local channel, but it's not really local according to Dish and, uh-huh. and DirecTV. Yeah. So there's some confusion for like sports markets
oh,
here
sure.
too.
It's a very unique
it's
market.
A weird like
yeah, I could talk
in between
for hours about that
yeah it's a weird in between kind of a place
right right. I didn't know if it was like part of Bakersfield or part,
sure
so I'm like, what market is this?
Yeah.
So I went online and I looked it up, and I was in the process of looking for jobs at that point.
Okay.
And went to the it's TV Jobs is the site that you okay. go to get your jobs.
Yeah.
Sure enough,
there was.
Job was open.
Wow.
Applied for it. I'm like, I told my news director, my now news director, then who I'm sending the applicant to, mm-hmm. I'm like, I can't guarantee I get this job, but you will look at my resume because my last name is Santa Maria, and that's not a joke.
And
sure enough.
There it was.
It's
and
fake, man.
And your last name is Santa Maria with no spaces,
no space,
right?
No
okay,
space.
But the M is capitalized.
It's there. Yes, capital M.
Right.
I fully understand there's supposed to be an M in it. Or there's, excuse me.
Supposed to be a space?
Supposed to be a space in it, yep. Yes. My dad.
And an M.
Yes, and an M, both. You're right. But what would happen, I'd get mail from, that would be marked to Matthew Maria. And I just got to a point where I got sick of it. So I'm like, I'm taking the space out of it.
Okay, because they assume the space was your middle name.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was dumb, but yeah, but yeah. I mean, that's what they do.
Yeah.
So no offense intended to the loyal people of the beautiful city of Santa Maria, but
right.
but that is the story behind why I don't have a space in my last name.
And I really did enjoy the commercials when you first got here. That was a fun indoctrination.
There was a lot of good feedback about those.
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah. Dave, I think Dave Hovde kind of stole the show there. I'm Johnny Longpoke.
He usually does. Yeah, they were all good.
Yeah, yeah. It was fun.
They were all good.
So I want to talk about Nebraska because, like, you know, somebody who gets to cover a big-time college football program,
uh-huh.
big-time college, I mean, basketball, you're talking about a mm-hmm. school that wins national championships in volleyball, I think, right?
Yeah.
Right?
You
I
know
mean,
yeah.
Yeah.
Volleyball's
so,
awesome there.
You know, have had a quarterback from California, too,
mm-hmm.
recently.
Look at you,
Camarillo.
Just dropping knowledge.
Look at that. Yeah,
about
from
Taylor?
Camarillo.
Martinez?
Yeah.
Yeah. From, okay,
yeah.
I knew he was from California. I didn't know where.
Yeah, Camarillo's about halfway between, like, Ventura and L.A.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, if you go down the 101. Has Nebraska football, now that you're kind of not there anymore and you're kind of taking a step back, it seems like they've kind of taken a step back in the last, like, 10, 15 years.
For sure.
I mean,
sure.
I picture growing up in the Tommy Frazier days.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the fans don't care any less about it, but is there
they
like
care
a,
about that though? Yeah.
Is there like a rumbling? Like, oh man, we haven't won in 10 years. We've been kind of midland, and it's just what happened.
There are two distinct sides of this argument, and
okay.
it is a constant argument in Lincoln between
yeah.
the people that will defend Bo Pelini to his death and the people that are, you know, sick of 8-4, 9-3, which, and it's such an interesting and
yeah.
unique thing because they're never going to be what they were in the early 90s. That's just unreasonable to think they're going to win national championships every year. I mean, it's still
right.
Lincoln, Nebraska.
Or to be dominant or
yeah,
that
like
way.
The facilities are awesome there. Like,
yeah, I've
you
heard,
could
yeah.
say, like, who wants to go to Lincoln, Nebraska with the 0-degree weather? Like, I'm telling you, these facilities there are awesome.
Yeah.
And they have that tradition.
Right.
But you're right. Like, they have taken a step back, and it's hard to ignore. And it is very much a point of topic.
It's a point of contention.
Annually.
Okay.
Annually in Lincoln.
Now, I'm not up on them enough to know that whether they still like run mostly the triple option, but I know Taylor was a triple option quarterback.
Yeah, that's pretty much gone.
It's pretty much gone.
It's
but that's
spread,
what the last
actually.
That's the last 5 years?
I'd say a little farther than that.
Okay.
I'd say 10 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
They'll still run the option.
The read option kind of more.
Yeah. It's they have a new offensive coordinator, and he's more of a spread guy. So they'll get more. Yeah. You won't see a whole lot of triple option from him.
And so, you know, you're really talking about, you know, one school, I think, in FBS, maybe one or two. Air Force.
Right.
Probably.
Army.
Army, okay.
Yeah. Army, Air Force. I don't know. I mean, they hired the Georgia Southern guy who was a triple option.
Army,
guy,
so. Air Force, Navy. There you go. Okay.
The
service schools.
Georgia Tech.
Okay. Yep. All right. So you got four of them.
Mm-hmm.
There's some talk sometimes about the triple option. You grew up around the triple option, obviously, mm-hmm. watching Nebraska. What are your feelings about it? Was it kind of like nostalgic to come to a school that runs it and watch it being run? I mean, this year the efficiency wasn't like the year before, but it's still kind of an efficient offense. They still scored, right. I think, in the high 20s or low 30s points per game on average. Like, what are your kind of thoughts on the triple option?
To me, in general, like it come. I think sports and something like that is a very simple answer, or at least the simple answers, because I don't know the X's and O's of football enough.
Sure.
You win, it doesn't matter if you're running triple option, you're running spread offense. You win enough games, people enjoy to watch it. Like the whole it's boring and stuff like that. You win 10, 11 games, like it's not boring, it's fun. So
right.
I think at the end of the day, if Coach Walsh or any other coach, you know,
right.
if they stand by that triple option and they can win games with it the same way someone can win games with a spread option
right.
or any other offensive or defensive philosophies, like I got no problem with it. That's basically the I'm not going to say like you got to overhaul it.
The proof's in the pudding,
right?
And,
exactly.
And
you win
yeah.
games, then you.
I tend to agree. I tend to agree as far as like the winning. If
right.
you win, you either win or you don't win.
Right.
It's either successful or it's not. Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting to watch it at the college level because every team is like 1,000 times different. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. when one kid graduates and you get other players in, yes, there's some of the same players, but it's. Each team is so different.
I will say on the same topic, the one thing that I've noticed that just to the general fan, the fan that likes to watch games, the one thing is when a triple option isn't successful, you'll hear a lot more grumblings than if the spread offense isn't successful and you right. lose 72-49. You know what I'm saying?
Because it's a unique thing that not everybody
yeah,
does.
And because the casual fan is being entertained despite the fact that they're losing. So that's the only difference.
It's not the conventional wisdom.
Yeah.
And they're, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
I'm not saying I feel that way. I'm just saying that's what I've noticed from the general fan in terms of the difference.
Yeah. Yeah.
But to me, I don't care what you run as long as you win.
So I noticed you also had some questions about soccer. Nebraska has a soccer program, I presume.
They do.
But like Cal Poly soccer program is kind of a special deal as far as how many kids go. The UCSB game that I saw you at.
Definitely a unique thing in a good way. Sport in general. They have a soccer team in Nebraska, at Nebraska. I think the women's team was actually pretty good this year, if I'm not mistaken. But the sport in general is just not a big sport there.
Right.
And so that was a big... I don't know why I was surprised by the fact that it was a big sport here.
Right.
I shouldn't have been into the West Coast, you know?
Well, but
I mean, I've grown
but
up...
But it's not at every West Coast school.
Right. That's true. I mean, that's true. And
there are schools like UC Irvine that have had success, that have gotten in the tournament, that have... MLS players who don't have a fan base like you find in Santa Barbara
or
Cal Poly.
Right, no. I wouldn't say I ever didn't like soccer. I have grown to really enjoy the atmosphere and the sport in general. Anytime you can actually like understand a little more like the logistics of what a sport is trying to, you know, like it's more entertaining to watch. I remember I never really cared about volleyball one way or the other until I got to Nebraska. And
it's an indoor sport.
Yep.
It's, yeah.
That they'll put 8,000 in that place every night. There's the sellout streak is ridiculous for that.
Wow.
And it's
Is that the capacity of the arena in Lincoln?
Okay. And it's so, and it's a fun sport and it's the atmosphere is so fun.
Wow.
And I've grown to really, really enjoy volleyball. So I was happy to see the Cal Poly volleyball team have the success. They were so much better this
year. They're making strides.
Right, right. And that was good to see because it's a sport that I really enjoy.
And they've been great in the past.
Right.
I mean, they've made the tournament and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're a really interesting program. Volleyball is fun for me. The high school I went to up in Cambria won some CIF titles.
Mm-hmm.
When I was there, they won a CIF title, and I think they won one recently.
Mm-hmm.
The coach up there, Pam Canyon, is amazing.
Yeah.
And so they've really kind of got me excited about it back when I was in high school. But then I think it's really just the biggest momentum sport that there is.
Mm-hmm.
I think the level of like momentum that matters in the next point.
Yeah.
You know, what you did in the previous point matters a ton in the next point. And that's in volleyball, more than any other sport.
That's a great point. It's why I like college basketball so much, because that's similar, because the emotion, because the sport, like in football, I mean, there's momentum clearly, but you're talking about breaks between every play. Like that is just.
And it's a 2.5 hour, three hour affair in those. In volleyball or basketball, it's like 2 hours or less.
I mean, I'm weird. Let's just cut to the chase. I'm a goofy dude. I love watching coaches call timeouts. Momentum, why? Like, it's very interesting to me.
When and how?
Yeah, uh-huh. And like how you utilize them. And volleyball is the same way. Yeah. Like you can't just use them every time you get 2 points. You're going to run out of timeouts in the first, you know.
Yeah.
So that's funny. Yeah.
I thought it was funny. Sam this year, the Cal Poly women's women's volleyball coach, Sam Crossan, there was a game I went to, and it was against a decent team, but he just said, I think he just decided, you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to call timeouts whenever they're screwing up, and I'm just going to use them all. And just be done with it.
And like, I almost agree with that philosophy. Right. I remember when the Saints, I think it was it last? I think it was during the regular season. They were going somewhere with a big home field advantage.
Okay.
And Sean Payton was like, he's like, look, guys, I'm probably going to use these timeouts early and you're probably going to question me, but this is the way I'm going to do it. Because I feel like so many coaches will save these timeouts and then, you know, the game gets out of hand and who cares how many timeouts you have at that point. You got to that's funny, yeah.
In football or basketball,
right?
For sure.
Any sport, really. Yeah. And it's more than just, you know, the atmosphere of the crowd, because you see like all the time in college basketball, these venues that don't draw real well, but these teams win at home because they're familiar with the environment and momentum's real. Like,
yeah,
it's real. It's cool to watch.
Yeah, I haven't been to the Matadome, but you know, I hear it's kind of a small. You know, a lot smaller than Mott even. You know, talking about like 1,000 people, I think, that maybe 1,500 that you can fit in there. But like you said, it's the environment. It's the hoops. It's the whole thing. And I think it's super interesting to watch, you know, an 18-year-old develop or a 20-year-old develop. Because when you're watching the NBA players, I know what to expect out of Robert Sacre on a given night. Yeah, he might go for, you know, 15 or something, but or whoever I'm watching on the Lakers or the Clippers, I know what Chris Paul's going to do. I'm not going to see Chris Paul make a significant increase in terms of his skill level at this point. Maybe a rookie that you see out there, you're like, oh, man, that guy can actually play. And maybe you see a kid in his first 3 years in the league make some improvement. But once they've been in the league for 3 or 4 years, you don't see this like most improved kind of whatever happening. In college, you can see it and it's tangible. You can see a kid like Joel Awich like make an improvement from the beginning of the year to the middle of the year, 10 games or something. And now he's starting and now he's making an impact or whoever you're talking about at the college level. That's something I really enjoy about watching college and also high school. Sports.
And it's stuff that, and it's so cliche, but it's so true. And it's why sports are awesome, because that kind of stuff is stuff that they'll take with them for the rest of their lives in terms of handling adversity. Like it's a microcosm of, because you know, like when I don't get a job offer for 2 months, like it's the same kind of negative energy as if, you know, I'm on the other team's on an 8-0 run. Like how I handle it then.
Or I got benched for 2 games.
Yeah, like how do you handle that adversity? Do you sit around and feel sorry about yourself? Do I sit around and not apply for any jobs because I'm assuming I'm not going to get them? Like
slump your shoulders and pull your jersey out of your shorts.
Right. And it's so true. And you're right, because the guys that are in the NBA, I don't know if it's just that they're more mature or if they are really indifferent to the fact, you know, like someone scores. There is momentum in professional sports and in the NBA, but it's so much
different.
Smaller. Yeah, like someone makes a bucket, the other team is like, okay, my turn to have the ball now.
I've been there before. yeah. The coaches just act like you've been there before.
Maturity. They're older, but maybe it's the fact that they just don't care quite as much as the college guys. But.
Yeah.
And I love both sports, but there's something different about the college sports for sure.
And when you watch high school, so most of the college guys like keep their heads. You can't really tell. Mm-hmm. They're too busy worrying about getting back or whatever. You know, at least at the Division I level where Cal Poly plays, you know, you don't see a lot of on either team, mm-hmm. you know, kind of like moping, right? At the high school level, though, that's a really interesting thing for me to see like a team like Mission, who's won 50-something straight games against local teams. And the way those kids act, yeah, they shoot and rebound and run the floor and run plays, la, la, la. That all matters. But, like, I really enjoy watching the way certain players just, like, they don't get affected.
Right.
And that's, as a 17 year old kid. And I just can't picture myself at 16 or 17 not being affected.
Right. That's why I've spent the last month on the campaign trail for Quentin Adlish.
Yeah.
Because he's a junior at Mission Prep.
Yeah.
He's a guard. I heard about him before I watched him play.
Uh-huh.
I'm telling you, if you like basketball, you have to watch this kid play because he's such a unique combination of talent and maturity for his age. Because I remember a week ago, they were playing San Luis Obispo. Big rivalry.
Right.
Really good environment. Both crowds there.
Good.
It's so easy to get, like, wound up, especially at that age. And he just played his game. And it's just the little stuff like that that really impressed me. And that kid's going to be really, really good.
Because talent-wise and you know, player-wise, I think, you know, when you look at it, you know, Mission and San Luis aren't 30 points apart, you know, when you think about that
right.
way. But you talk about the ability to, like, mentally lock yourself down, the ability to make that happen. I think Quentin's in the embodiment of that for his team. And you see these, you know, a lot of those players are like sophomores and freshmen that are getting playing time for them that are doing that. I just can't. I mean, you know, I was an emotional guy in high school. I can't.
Still an emotional guy. I have a bad sportscast at 6, and I have struggles to not let it affect me at 11. And I'm 26 years old.
Right. You miss a shot. You miss a shot. What are you going to do next, right? Yeah, it's insane. It's insane to me that kids can do that. But that is, I think, a lot of what separates a kid with really good skills who is going to play at a Division I school like Quentin versus a kid maybe who has the same skills who might not.
And it's not to say that you can't learn it, because what you were saying before, guys all the time learn it over the course of a season.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes college coaches so fascinating, because teams become such a microcosm of coaches. And if you've ever talked to Joe Calero, that team is Joe Calero, like, in a nutshell. And that's a good thing, because he's a good coach.
And it was really quickly. Uh-huh. I got to say, like, I went to, like, one or two games the year before he was the coach. I just moved back here from Colorado. And I went to one or two games, and that team was a mess. And then Calero got here, and instantly there was an identity. And that's actually the thing that I don't want to say I'm worried about this year. Even they're 2-0 in conference. You can't complain or worry too much. But I think the defensive identity that was so clear, it's easy to have when you don't have a David Nwaba level athlete, or when you don't have, you know, Joel Awich, you know, level athlete as far as running and jumping and skill set. You know, they had a lot of guys who were 6'7" and kind of bruisers down low. They had, you know, guys who could shoot the ball a little bit. They could extend the floor a little bit. But, you know, I've been to a few, like, 43, 39 games.
Right.
At Mott. And they were exactly who he was, right? That's what he wanted to establish. And I think it's interesting this year, he has the athletes that you've kind of said, oh, man, if he just could get those athletes. But they're not playing the same kind of 2-3 matchup zone that they've been playing. Mm-hmm. They're in kind of a 3-2 that utilizes the speed and quickness of some of those guys. But it's not as easy to tell from a layperson standpoint. What is this? What is the identity of these guys?
Right,
you know,
right.
What are they trying to accomplish? Are they defensive? Are they offensive? What's their whole deal?
I think Joe would admit that they're still trying to find that identity. And I think because I feel like at the college level, it's much easier to teach offensive philosophy than defensive philosophy, because playing defense doesn't get you on SportsCenter. You know what I'm saying?
And it doesn't. I mean, you watch high school games, even really good players don't necessarily play the most fantastic defense.
You don't go to
your
friend and say, man, I had 7 awesome defensive series today. You go to your friend and you say, man, I had 21 points and 4 dunks, you know?
So
it's very impressive to me to get college kids to buy into a defensive philosophy and get a guy like Nwaba, who is a freak athletically.
Yeah.
To get, and you're right, they're definitely.
He's like athletically, he's a big, like, Big Ten, like, whatever,
oh,
wherever.
Sure.
He's a wherever
Pac-12,
freak.
Pac-12,
right.
Yeah,
he's like athletically, he's incredible.
To get him to buy into a system where he knows defense is going to be the staple, it says a lot, you know? And you're right, though, it's a very fine line in terms of maximizing what he can bring to the table. Right. And I think you're right. They're still totally trying to find that, and I don't think that's surprising.
And them being 2-0 in conference and still trying to find that has got to be a good thing for them, for sure. And just real quick, because I know You got to get out here.
I'm a busy man. My whole show is done. But
is it okay? High five! Way to go! You just got to stand there.
Bill
and say,
did like 80% of it, so don't.
So you just got to stand up there and be like, "Look at the athlete in the making," or what do you call it? What's the legend in the making? Yeah, sorry, yeah, that's a good
and it's a good one today. So watch for sure. Yeah. Okay, that's Clayton Hanley, kid from Santa Ynez, who is a real good athlete. He set the Nebraska. He didn't set any Nebraska records. The California state record for sacks in the game.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in the fall. He's good. Yeah.
Wow. Watch it. Wow, that's awesome. So the women's basketball team, too. I mean, they're on the borderline of a real kind of Big West dynasty, if you want to think of it that way. I remember back in the day, UC Santa Barbara used to be that kind of Big West women's basketball dynasty. It seems like Cal Poly has started to get there. Now, they've only won the tournament, the Big West tournament, the one time last year, but they've had four conference players of the year in a row, and they look kind of hard to beat this year.
Right. You can speak to the history of it better than I could, but like I said with Adlish, if you like basketball and haven't seen him play, go watch him. Yeah. If you like basketball and haven't seen that team play, go watch them, because on top of the fact that they're really good, they're really fun to watch. Those two guards, Elgato and Irvin, are both awesome. Schlemer is awesome down low.
She's a force.
And they play a really fun style of basketball. Yeah.
They play fast.
They get up and down. They score points. And like we said earlier, like no matter what you do, if you win, it helps. And they win. And what they did at Hawaii to start the conference, that 17-point comeback, that crazy finish, and they won in overtime. Yeah. They're going to be tough to beat in that league for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Matt Santa Maria from KSPY Sports, I really appreciate your time today.
Hey, thanks,
and we'll definitely do it again, maybe come baseball season.
Sure.
This is how I party.
All right, and we're back for part two of this podcast episode, and I'm here with Andy Stevens.
I've been demoted to part two, huh?
Part two today, because I already intro'd the podcast with Matt Santa Maria.
We can put a positive spin on it, though. I'm the closer.
The closer, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Make sure you're getting up in that mic. I don't know if it's the mic or what, but it was a little bit soft earlier today, too.
All up in it. No, I think this is pretty good here.
Yeah.
I can hear you just as well as I can hear myself, so.
But you're echoing in your own head.
A lot of people have said that.
So did you know Matt Santa Maria is from, he lived in Joplin, Missouri during the tornado?
Funny thing is, he's actually from Guadalupe.
No, he's from Nebraska.
Right.
Yeah, but he was living in Joplin, Missouri during the tornado, and he told us a little bit about it.
My grandmother's from Joplin, Missouri. From Joplin, Missouri.
Yeah, kind of crazy.
R.I.P.
Kind of crazy. Your dad's or your mom's? Said.
My dad's.
Wow.
Yeah.
Grandma Stevens.
Grandma Stevens.
Wow. Right on. So a lot going on, but...
So what did you guys talk about?
We talked about... Well, I'll let you listen to it.
Gee, thanks.
Yeah, you can listen to it.
You can't just say it. You have to...
It was a lot. We just... I wanted to find out more about
surmise
Matt.
Surmise it.
I wanted to find out more about Matt, so okay. I asked him about himself. He pitched at D2 for a year in college, and
did his last name fit on the back of his uniform?
Yes, I'm sure it did. There's actually no space between the Santa and the Maria, and he told us why. So that's a teaser, but you've already heard it.
Teaser.
But for the listeners, they've already heard this fascinating conversation. So
okay.
So I'll let you hear it later on with them.
Wonderful.
So I know that that I've seen some of your Facebook posts lately, Andy. What's the deal with the Lakers, man?
I don't know. It's very frustrating, because I think it boils down to one simple thing. And, people want to say that it has a lot to do with the injuries. And, I mean, that's just an easy excuse to make, regardless of if they're best players.
That they're 14 and...
14 and 24. These guys are all NBA players. And the biggest issue I see is the coaching, D'Antoni. I just don't understand his whole system. I don't understand what he's trying to accomplish. I don't see anything out on the court that is at all organized or that looks like it has a plan. You know, he always says his offense just the ball finds energy. I mean, what does that mean exactly? Like what are we running here? What are the concepts? I just don't see it. It's like you can't be a team that doesn't play any defense and then shoots the most three-pointers in the league. I mean, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
Even at its very best with Steve Nash back in the, I guess that would be the mid-2000s, early 2000s, did they even make the Western Conference Finals more than once? Maybe once?
Series between the Suns and the Spurs,
right?
When everybody was like not ejected, but Amari Stoudemire came on the court. Do you remember that?
Oh, and they got suspended?
And Amari got suspended, I think, for game 7, and they lost.
Right.
Or game 6, maybe. It was something like that where it was a key game, and the Suns end up losing the series. The Spurs won the championship that year. I think that was possibly the Lakers' final, and that might have been not the Western Conference Finals. It might have been the semifinals the year that...
04 maybe or something like that.
The Karl Malone Laker year.
Yeah, they broke that they ended up making it to...
Right.
No, they lost to...
But that was maybe the Suns' best shot with Stoudemire. It was when Quentin Richardson was still there.
Well, the point,
Joe Johnson.
The point being is that, yeah, that team was supremely talented, and they didn't even make the NBA Finals. So I just don't understand why D'Antoni is celebrated as such an offensive genius and, you know, made to be a coach of the Olympic team and all this stuff. I just don't see it. I mean, I just don't see it at all. Yeah. It doesn't seem like he even cares anymore. His defensive philosophy is an absolute joke. I mean, these guys are giving up 137 points to Denver. They gave up 120 last night to the Cleveland Cavaliers at home. I mean, enough is enough already. I don't understand why... Kupchak and ownership. I think that Jim Buss is just very stubborn, and he's like, this is my guy. I'm going to ride it out with this guy.
Right.
I mean, if it were me, his you know what, would have been
fired like he probably could have got something
a month
for,
ago.
Right.
You
and,
know?
And case in point, I mean, he probably could have got something for Andrew Bynum before Bynum went away a lot better.
Probably.
Maybe, you know, he might hold on to things a little bit too long when they're his decision. But, you know, when it comes to D'Antoni, to your point about the Olympic team, you know, he spent a lot of years in Italy, so I think the idea is that he knows international basketball and the way that the plays work and the way that guys move under the international rules and just the style that he understands the
kinds
of principles to coach against.
I mean,
yeah.
That's the only reason
sure,
I could
sure.
see.
Sure,
so.
Sure. But to your point about, you know, why is he still there, I was going to say, you know, to the Mike D'Antoni, and you're not the only person that feels that way about Mike D'Antoni. Levine. Screamo is not a huge fan over time, and there's others that are Laker fans that are friends of ours who just aren't having it with him.
If you care, you should be supremely fed up right now. I mean, this is a joke.
Here's
this is not the Laker way.
Here's the interesting thing. You know, D'Antoni was the coach in New York while they were trying to lose. If you think of it that way, while they were tanking for Melo. Yeah,
well,
in the years before Melo, right? Because they needed to sign, or they had horrible
contracts. I don't really know if there's something to that.
They had
though,
horrible contracts,
you know?
Right? So maybe the idea is that D'Antoni, you sell this idea, this myth at times, maybe, but this idea of a run and gun, exciting team that's going to be at least fun to watch, whether they win or lose during transition times. And I think the problem is that the Lakers haven't ever figured out since they got Shaq. They've never been able to really say we're in a transition period, and that's a testament to their organization over the course of the number of years that they've been. But with Kobe getting older, man, it's time to start talking about transitioning, right? I mean, I think it's time to start
just hard for me to understand. I mean, you know, transition, schmanzition. What? Get him out of there. If he's not the guy, get him out of there.
He was never guy, though, I think is my point.
Well, get him out of there, then, if he never even was the guy. I mean, you don't want to leave him in there and keep, you know, perpetuating bad tendencies and bad habits and things like that. If he's not the guy, let Kurt Rambis take over and get him out of there. And then next year, go find your guy. Go get Phil or
I like Kurt Rambis.
Whatever the plan is. I mean, that's the other thing. I don't think Phil's in the future either, because I think Jim Buss just has too big of an ego that he's not going to allow.
Yeah, Jim.
His sister.
If it was
going to
happen, it would have happened already. And P.S. about his sister, she retweeted a picture of my 5-month-old in Laker gear this week.
Yeah, she does that a lot. Yeah, because I see her on Twitter doing that a lot.
Yeah, she did that yesterday. Cool. So that was good times. So here's a question for you. If the Lakers have healthy guys, so let's talk about who's been injured, because this team's been depleted with injury, right?
There is no doubt about that.
So let's talk about the roster, because really you have a roster in the NBA, and it's not like there's just other guys to just plug in all the time. I mean, there's a reason why
you have 15 guys.
Why Kobe makes what he makes. There's a reason why Powell makes what he makes. Yeah. There's a reason why those guys make money. Powell is the only one that really hasn't been super injured, right? But he's been injured.
He got injured again recently, and he's kind of fighting through it.
So you have Kobe who's been out. Nash basically hasn't played this year, right?
Kobe came back from a torn Achilles, and then he had another injury. He had a hairline fracture in his kneecap.
Right.
Nash has back issues that stem from leg issues that he has. So, I mean, his back has been...
He's old.
Right.
The Nash contract been, like, the worst, quietly the worst contract that somebody's given somebody? I mean, I don't know how much money he makes, but I feel like
I wouldn't stack it up there with the Amari Stoudemires of the world or anything like that.
But the way it ended up, I guess, depending on Nash, the Lakers were totally depending on him being an all-star caliber player still, even if it was only for 50 games a year. And they haven't even got 50.
I don't know about all-star caliber.
I think he's played like 20 games.
He's probably
in 2 years.
Played about 15-20%
in 2 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And so
it's up there. It's probably top five.
You know, that's pretty bad
in the past decade or so of worst contracts.
And quietly, like the Lakers don't make a big deal out of it. Nash doesn't make a big deal out of it.
It's because they have the money and they have the fortitude to be able to withstand it. But
they kind of have the money,
but they kind of don't. Is what we're seeing now. Maybe they don't.
So who else has been injured? Key role players.
Steve Blake,
point guard.
Yeah, another point guard, Jordan Farmar.
They had 3 point guards injured.
Right.
Now think about D'Antoni's offense. Right. Now this is like on the flip side here. D'Antoni's offense is predicated on the point guard being able to do stuff. Kendall Marshall came in, and he was kind of a skilled point guard.
Well, D'Antoni has said in interviews that it's not, you know, yes, we need a point guard, but there's other guys that can step in and do it. Because
he's got to say that.
You know, okay. So then don't say that. If it's not the truth, then don't say it.
So Blake, Farmar.
Tired of his double speak.
God, how about Jordan Hill?
Jordan Hill is playing now.
He wasn't though.
He wasn't. Well, he was hurt for only like a couple weeks, so it wasn't that
say like big. Five or eight games.
Another guy injured.
Point made, right? Nick Young's been healthy.
Yeah, but he is also fighting an injury himself. What was it? I believe his lower back.
So this is my point. We're coming around, and Meeks
has not been hurt.
Meeks has not been hurt. He's maybe the one guy.
Xavier Henry's out with an injury right now.
I mean, Robert Sacre is your starting center. What are you going to do? I mean, I hate to put it that way, but like I think it's I'll get to my point here. I think it's the best case scenario for the Lakers. I honestly do for the organization. For the future. Let's go. You know, let's win 25 games this year. We're 14-24.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think if you're Lakers management, secretly you're saying, let's win 25 games. Let's get ourselves a top 10 pick in the lottery. And and let's know that Kobe's coming back next year.
There is that.
Let's know that is Powell's contract up after this year or next year?
After next year.
So we got Powell coming back on a contract year.
Yep.
Okay. You got and a little bit of wiggle room. Maybe you draft figure out a way to move up to draft like a Wiggins or a who's the guy on Duke? Jabari Parker. Or I know there's like five of them this year that are really just top level guys who project just so clearly to the NBA. So you know, in the Kevin Durant draft, you know, there's like three of them, maybe like Westbrook, Durant, and somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
It was Odin, right, that year.
Yeah.
But like,
so you're saying top pick along
get a top
with
5 or 10 pick,
you know, having Powell and Sacre and Jordan Hill, and
listen,
then keeping Wes Johnson,
and then when Kobe,
Xavier Henry,
as
Nick
Kobe
Young.
Fades away over the next 3 years, you have this other cornerstone to build your franchise around,
right?
And And so I think that's really the best case scenario. I think for Laker fans to hope for. I think if you finish in the eighth seed, you're not going to get a great player at number 18 or something.
Right.
It's, you know, or number 14 or 15. You're not gonna get that. And so,
but the other flip side of
tank,
that is,
and I'm not saying tank. I'm saying guys are hurt. It's a legitimate thing. Maybe they're not tanking. Maybe they just have bad luck this year.
Well, they have had bad luck.
Remember when David Robinson got hurt?
They have had bad luck.
What happened when David Robinson got hurt? They finished last. They sucked, and they drafted Tim Duncan. So the Spurs did.
But the flip side of drafting a great player is Lakers have always had the ability to go out and sign big free agents. So you know this is a big summer, and next summer too is also another big summer.
Yeah, target Kevin Love.
Well, that's the thing.
That's my guy.
That probably will happen. Is what they're saying is Kevin Love wants to be a Laker.
Has you know UCLA ties, right. Family in LA,
and they the Lakers do have a piece in Powell that they could potentially give to
Minnesota for
with the
media. Like a sign and trade,
right.
On both sides.
Some and probably add in some kind of draft pick or something like that because I don't think Minnesota would want to give Love up straight up for.
I've heard the sports guy talk about adding Memphis into that mix and sending Pau to Memphis, having Memphis send some things to Minnesota, and having Minnesota.
What
send
so the
Love.
Brothers could play together? Is that his whole theory?
Yeah, and then they could sign Calderon too and have like four out of the five. I think they got like two Spaniards on there already.
Does it make sense, or is it just something that he made up?
It's just
fun. Ooh, they're brothers.
Yeah, I mean
maybe they'll play together.
Well,
yeah,
Pau already played in Memphis before.
Yeah,
that's where he was. Okay. He can play the high post and Mark can play the low post. I think there's something to it. I don't know. Anyway,
all right.
I think it's a good thing. Okay, on to the Lakers. I have a couple of individual player questions for you because you've been watching the games more than I have. With my 5-month-old, it's like go to bed at 9 every night.
Right. Oh my God. Up whenever she starts crying again.
About 9 times a night. Not highball.
Sounds like fun.
Nick Young, is there any more
Enjoy
entertaining?
That.
Is there any more entertaining, ineffective but sometimes just ridiculously entertaining player than Nick Young?
He's entertaining.
He's entertaining.
Swaggy P.
Swaggy P. What does P stand for? Nobody knows.
Well,
Nick Young, baby.
It kind of goes along with his persona. No, nobody really does know.
I watched the Christmas Day game a little bit. That was the Heat, right?
Yeah.
And Nick Young was lighting fools up. Against
he can
LeBron.
Go off. I mean, he can go off.
I think it was Christmas Day, right?
Take him, you know, probably right about now. I wouldn't call this his prime, maybe a couple years ago. And then take Kobe about 6-7 years ago in his prime. They would have a one-on-one dribble between your legs, you know.
There was a game
crossover
when,
showdown just to hit an open 20-footer, you know.
There was a game when Jameson and Kobe each scored 50, I think. When Jameson was on the Warriors.
He was talking about that the other night when they were playing the Warriors. But yeah, no, Nick Young is entertaining. He can get his own shot, but the downside is he will turn the ball over.
He takes bad shots.
He does take bad shots.
But entertainingly bad shots, like when he threw the layup over the backboard. Like what I'm saying is that
entertainingly bad shot.
I guess what I'm saying is for as second level as the players who are on the court are, and 4 out of 5 of them are a lot of the time.
Sure.
Right? When you have Powell starting with like, Xavier Henry, Kendall Marshall, Robert Sacre, and I don't know, Ryan Kelly or somebody, right? Yeah. I mean,
but again,
that's a second rate team.
Those guys are NBA players, yeah. And you should have a defensive system that doesn't allow 130 points a game. Period. There's no argument.
They're
to that.
Borderline NBA players.
You know? No, they're not borderline NBA players.
Robert Sacre?
He's in the NBA. He's on the Lakers. He's in the NBA, and he's played big minutes, and he can score. If he were to get 33 to 34 minutes a game, he could score 12 points and get 8 rebounds. Absolutely. There's no doubt in my mind. Have you watched him lately? He's a lot better than he was last year.
Right. What I'm saying is that the expectation for Robert Sacre needs to be reasonable. And if you if he's your bright spot, if he's getting 38 minutes, your team's not very good.
So you're just saying he should just be average, and there's no way that he can improve. Or let's just leave his expectation as average. There's no way that he can get any better.
If I'm him, I think I can get better. If you're his coach, you're responsible for making him better. Sure.
Yeah, right.
But in the NBA, after a guy's been in a league for, and this is something me and Matt talked about earlier,
right,
why it's really fun to watch the college game, because you can see a kid in 10 games develop from a fringe bench player to a starter.
Sure.
Right, there's a kid on Cal Poly, Joel Awich, who, you know, has filled in here and there, but was getting probably like 10 or 12 minutes a game. The last two games he started, and they're 2-0 in conference. And so there's something that shifts over time for a player like him. My point is that in the NBA, you don't really see that shift. Guys know who guys are, and you don't see this like.
But this is his third year in the league. Who knows what he could become?
Okay,
2 years down the road, he could be a 15-10 guy.
Okay.
Starting here and there, coming off the bench. Who knows?
Okay.
Who knows? He's talented. He's 7 feet tall. He can dribble. He can move. He can move without the ball.
Can he?
He can set screens. He can rebound.
Okay.
He plays good defense.
Okay.
You know, a lot better defense than Powell or anyone else.
Here's what I'm saying.
Chris Kaman.
Here's what I'm saying, Laker fans. Yes, be mad at Mike D'Antoni. Sure. Yeah, a lot of it's his fault. That's great. But any coach with this roster... If Phil Jackson
with this roster would not give up 130 points a game. Guarantee that.
But they would not make the playoffs.
Sure, that's fine. But they wouldn't give up 130 points a game and absolutely have no chance to win games.
They wouldn't tank?
Are
the Lakers tanking?
No, I don't believe in that.
But are they doing it? Like, whether you believe in it or not, are they doing it?
No, they're not doing it. I just don't think that they have enough talent on the court right now to win games.
Okay.
But... aside from that, giving up so many points, that's a whole nother argument onto itself. And that's embarrassing to give up that many points consistently to teams over and over and over. Out of their 24 losses this year, I bet they've averaged points given up somewhere in the high 100 teens.
Like 115, 120.
That's a joke.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Yeah.
The NBA of today definitely favors the offense, but that's pretty... it's not looking good. Here's a broader question, the 20,000 foot view, if you will. The question is, if the Lakers will ever, do you think the Lakers will ever actually be back to being contenders with Jim Buss being the?
Do I think they will? Yes. I mean, at some point.
Do you think he'll figure it out?
At some point, if you have enough money.
How much influence?
If you have the money that he has and you have the GM that he has.
How much do you think a difference makes Jerry versus Jim?
A huge difference.
On a daily basis? Like, in other words, if Jerry Buss was there, would that make as direct a difference as saying the Lakers wouldn't give up 120 on a nightly basis?
On a daily basis, no, because the owner doesn't really run the daily operations. You know, as far as like the front office and stuff like that.
But he influences it.
But as far as
the
overall outlook
and
the overall philosophy of the two, Jerry was a guy that had a lot of trust in the people that he hired to do their jobs, which is...
Jerry West, Mitch Kupchak.
Which is what a lot of successful ownership type people do.
Mm-hmm.
You hire people to do a job, you trust them to do their job. You're going to get results. You know, when you hire people to do a job and you undermine them and don't allow them to do their job and you let your ego get in the way, then you're not going to be successful. So I do think that Jim Buss can be successful, but he has to learn from these mistakes that he's had early in his ownership tenure, and he's got to learn to be able to kind of turn over a new leaf at some point and allow the people that he's hired to do their jobs to be able to do their jobs, like Mitch Kupchak. I guarantee you if it were up to Mitch Kupchak, he would – D'Antoni would be out the door, you know.
You think?
Absolutely,
yeah.
Absolutely. I totally believe that it is Jim Buss.
Even given the roster and the way that you don't think there's any,
because there's no defensive philosophy there.
Okay.
There's nothing happening.
Right.
At the very least,
there never really has
been.
What
are you talking about?
With D'Antoni.
Oh, okay. With a guy like Phil, I mean, that was a beautiful thing to watch.
Of course.
They had an idea. They were forcing the offense to do what they wanted them to do.
Right.
You know, D'Antoni, it's just whatever, you know. Oh, and in all the post-game interviews, well, we got to do a better job. Well, reporter, ask him how you're going to do a better job. What steps are you taking to make it better? Not we just have to do better. I mean, it just kills me, you know.
Awesome. Anyway. Awesome. All right. Well, I think we're going to end this podcast on that note. Andy, it's
thank
been...
you for you guys got to end on a high note you. And then just thank walk you. Out when you get that round
thank
of applause.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for coming.
I'll be here all week. Yeah. All right. Thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in Trouble Town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Streetlights so bright, they blind my vision. And the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue. Front page of the news. Keep trying.